Betting on sports can be hard, but hiring Morgan & Morgan is easy. Morgan & Morgan is America's largest injury law firm. They have over 100 offices nationwide and more than 1,000 lawyers. Their fee is free unless they win. For more information, go to forthepeople.com/bestbets or dial pound law. That's pound 529 from your cell phone. That's forthepeople.com/bestbets. This is a paid advertisement.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome to the Lombardi Line. I'm Michael Lombardi. Today we're joined by Will Hill, filling in for Dave Ross, who's enjoying an extended vacation at Virginia Beach. Dave, we hope you're having a great time. I know you are. Probably will, because his Cowboys were able to win yesterday. So I'm sure he's right there at the betting market, betting the Cowboys to make the playoffs. He was probably, you know, as Tom Brady was talking about their playoff chances with Kevin, you know, I think they were both kind of thinking, I was saying, Dave Ross is going to go the window here. Don't you think so? Welcome, Will.
What's going on? Yeah, we have plenty to talk about. I did see that number today, 20-1 for Dallas to make it. So you're going to need a couple security guards to restrain Dave from not making that bet. Yes,
Dave. Will, that's a St. Jude's play. Just give the kid, give money to the kids. Seriously, that would be better off. Let's do something good with that money. That's a St. Jude's play. There's no way that team with Cooper Rush and what we witnessed yesterday. But we got, you know, we have bigger things to talk about today than we do Cooper Rush's lack of ability in the Dallas offense. I've never seen poorer game management in all my life until I watched the second half of the Giant Cowboy game. The 2 minutes before the second half of the Cowboy Giant game. But Matt Eberflus really has taken game management to another level. And what bothers me more than anything, Will, and we'll get into it here in a second, is what his soundbite was after the game. Let's play that, Elliot.
And then we're there at second and 20. You know, take the sack right there. And, you know, so we're at 36 seconds right there. And our hope was, because it was third going into fourth, that we would re-rack that play at 18 seconds, throw it inbounds, get into the field goal range, and then call the timeout. And that's where it was. And that was our decision-making process on that. Again, we were outside the field goal range, you know, so we needed to get a few more yards in there as close as we can get. And then we're going to call timeout. And that's why we held that last timeout. At the end of the game.
In retrospect, how should you have handled the final sequence?
Yeah, I like what we did there.
How can he like it? How can he like it? I mean, look, you know, you can just see from Chicago games, and it's pretty clear that they don't practice game management and they don't teach game management to their players, because Caleb Williams was completely unaware of it. There was no, and I'm not blaming him at all, Will, but he was completely unaware with it. And I think what he explained there is, yeah, that's a good theory, but there's a golden rule in 2 minute when you get a sack, you almost have to call a timeout. That's one of the advantages of holding on to your timeouts, is because when you get a sack, it allows you to call a timeout. And look, you can spike, you know, I know it was third down, so he couldn't spike the ball. But when you call that timeout, all you have to do is throw the ball in bounds to get your field goal team ready to run out there and run the fourth down play and kick the field goal. Like, to me, I understand you want to save the timeout to set up the field goal, but you want to at least kick the field goal. I mean, that was really bad. It was the worst I've ever seen. I don't know how today he can sit there and say it's what we wanted to do. Will?
It's 14 hours later. I'm still in shock. I had the same reaction watching the game that I think everybody did, where you look at the person next to you and say, did that really happen? Is the game really over? The players look shocked that the game was over. Even the Lions players were looking at each other like, did they really just do that? It's almost so dumb. There's nothing to even talk about other than it's like the stupidest thing you've ever seen. It would be like somebody taking a stack of $100 bills and lighting them on fire and then asking me to react. Well, what did you think of what just happened? What am I supposed to say besides that's the dumbest thing I've ever seen? We talked yesterday about the Leon Lett game and some of these Thanksgiving, like, iconic games, iconic moments. This, in a lot of ways, was the coaching version of the Leon Lett game. And this is going to go down forever as a Thanksgiving memory in terms of like the Randy Moss game, the Leon Lett game, the Phil Luckett coin toss. You talked about the Longley game with the Redskins and the Cowboys. This is going to live forever. This is an all-time gaffe. I can compare it to – the only thing I can compare it to – remember J.R. Smith in the NBA Finals thought they were up by one and he dribbled out the clock and nobody called timeout, but they were tied. They went to overtime and lost. This is just inexcusable. And I do put some of it on Caleb Williams because his quotes after the game were just as bad. Said, you guys are playing the results. It's easy when you have a pause button to say what we should have done. We're being aggressive. Eberflus almost to me, and he was awful before this. He wasted a challenge in the first quarter that had no chance. I know Nance said, well, you can't blame Eberflus there. You can blame Eberflus. That had no chance of winning. And then Caleb Williams calls a timeout on that drive. They're on the 3-yard line. He calls a timeout to avoid a delay of game. It's going to be a 1-yard penalty, a 1.5-yard penalty. Who cares about that? The timeout is way more important. And Caleb Williams after the game saying, well, we didn't do anything wrong. You guys are just second guessing. Caleb Williams is going to be in our lives for a long time as a quarterback. Eberflus is going to get fired maybe today, maybe soon. He's just going to be a defensive coordinator. So we're not going to really have him as betters, as football fans. He's going to be off to the side. The fact that Caleb Williams doesn't know any better to call a timeout or to know that was botched at the end is just mind-boggling. Again, I'm still shocked. Part of it is a Viking fan, like, man, wanted the Lions to catch a loss. And there is more to talk about in terms of like the Lions second half, because it's funny, if you laid the points with the Lions, like, man, I should have covered. I should have been up like 31-0. I could have been up 31-0 at halftime. And if you're the Bears, you're like, man, I could have won the game, because they had chances to hit more a couple times. They had a pass called back on illegal hands to the face. But Eberflus, Caleb Williams, no accountability whatsoever after the game.
Well, but I agree with you on, and there's got to be some sense of instinctive game management. But to me, one of the things that you have to do as a head coach is teach game management to the players. Okay, here's the situation. Remember, we used to grow up playing baseball. You know, what did the baseball coach do? Okay, we got runners on first and third. The ball's hit here. What do we do, right? You know, I mean, and that was a time and an era where we all watched the entire baseball game. This is before ESPN came out with, you know, the highlights. And so kids stopped watching the whole game of baseball. You put yourself in situations. It's the same thing with football. You know, you have a 10-minute meeting every morning with your team and you go over situations, and Fridays are usually situation days. But to me, you know, this is what happens when you're trying, like, his theory was right in terms of, okay, we're going to get the ball in bounds. We want to call a timeout. But what play did they call? Like, if you're trying to throw the ball in the middle of the field, what were they doing? Like, okay, if that's your excuse, to what the reporter should have asked is, well, why did you not call a play where the ball came out of his hands quicker? What took so long to get you lined up? The golden rule is, when you get sacked, there's so many plays that come off the board. By the time the players get back and get lined up, you lose three plays. You can't afford to lose three plays. You know, now here's what he would say. Well, if we don't complete the next play, well, that makes it even more the reason. It's just hypothetically say that they threw the ball out of bounds with and saved 18 seconds on the clock. They can't kick the field goal there anyway, right? So wouldn't you be better off getting organized, having everybody come, okay, here's what we're going to do. They're going to play back. They're not going to want to give up the touchdown. They don't care about the field goal. They'll go this game into overtime. Let's make sure we complete the ball in the middle. We got our kickoff. We got our field goal team sitting, standing right here. They're going to run on the field, and we're going to get this field goal, make it, and go into overtime. I mean, that's what you do. That's why you call timeouts. Why do you think the NBA coaches have that clipboard where they're diagramming, even though the players don't pay attention to it, they're showing them what's going to happen next? I think, to me, that's really the biggest mistake. And your point about Detroit, it's one of the few times all year I've seen Detroit play with their food. You know, they had a chance to put the game away, the Gibbs fumble at the end of the first half. But to me, I think it was one of the few times they played with their food that I've seen all the time. I mean, they've got a 23-7 lead with 2:43 to go in the third quarter. And you would have think that there's no chance that Chicago's going to, because you feel like the way Detroit was moving the football, they're not going to stop them ever. Even if Chicago scores, this is going to get 30-13. They're going to do something. They're so aggressive, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think at one point in the game, it was the Lions had 250 yards and the Bears didn't have a first down. I don't think the Bears got the first down until, remember, there was that late drive with like the 2-minute warning.
Or it could have been after the
Gibbs fumble. I mean, that game was 31-0 on paper. Now they settle for field goals. Gibbs fumbles right around the 5, right around the 2, wherever it was. I mean, on paper, that's like a 31-0 game. And then all of a sudden you look up, if you're doing whatever with your family, if you're kind of half watching the game, you say, wait a second, the Bears are down 3 with the ball. What happened here?
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, here's the goes. They fumbled. They didn't get their first down until the 55-second mark in the second half, right? That's what it was. They got their first down. They only ran 6 plays on that drive, and they went out on downs. But here's where the Lions start. Field goal, touchdown, field goal, and they had the fumble going in, which was the killer. And then they come back in the second half and do exactly what they thought they would do, which is score a touchdown. And then that's when the fourth – that was the only drive they had in the third quarter. That was the only drive they had. It took like 6 minutes in the third quarter. They went 11 plays and they got 5 first downs. But then their fourth quarter, you know, they missed the field goal, which was not typical for them to do. But really, I think where Campbell probably feels like he's disappointed in his team is when he got the ball back with 5:36 to go in the game and they went 3 plays and out. And it was the only 3 and out they had the entire day. And to me, that inside call, I think Ben Johnson's probably going to kick himself up and down for as much talk about Eberflus's call. That Ben Johnson call on 3rd and 2 probably was going to be the one he's going to stay up at night thinking about, because that's not typical of what they did. They ran into a brick wall. They ran the wrong play. It happens. We understand it. They're really good. But I think that's the one there. I think that was the one time. And it's probably a good thing, Will, because I think now that they've learned their lessons, okay, we're getting that situation. We're not doing that again.
Does the second half make you feel differently about the Lions? Hey, maybe they're a little more beatable than people think. Or is it, hey, this game got weird. Things happen in the NFL.
Yeah, I think it's Thanksgiving. Things got weird. No, I thought Detroit, look, I think the one thing that we said going into this game was Chicago knew they were going to give up yards. I didn't think they would give up as many on the ground as they did. They were getting 10 yards at a clip. It was ridiculous, right? And so I don't think that you know, I think to me what Chicago did a good job of was their ability to play in the red zone. I mean, I think that's where Detroit's probably kicking themselves. This game, like you said, if you laid the 9.5 for as many times as they were in the red zone, you got to believe that, hey, we should have been able to win this game just because of our red zone play. But when you're 2-for-5 in red zone efficiency, which is not typical of Detroit, that's when you get into trouble. But we're talking about red zone. We got Black Friday with Antonio Pierce going into Kansas. I cannot wait today at 3:00. I got all the alarms set in the house here. We're going to watch a masterclass in coaching by the Raiders and the Chiefs. We'll talk about it when we come back here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Ready to elevate your tailgate game? You have to try Sewell's Barbecue. Born from a backyard cookout and a mason jar of unforgettable flavor, Sewell's has become the Southern favorite, lighting up taste buds from Georgia to the Carolinas. From wings to ribs to backyard burgers, Sewell's takes every bite to the next level. You can order Sewell's Barbecue Sauce at Sewell's, SewellsBBQSauce.com. Please try it. It is unbelievable. Will, have you had it yet?
No, I wonder if we get a little comp. Somebody going to send us some bottles so we can try it out.
Yeah, it's really good. Some. I mean, I'm a big barbecue guy, and this is outstanding. But we've got other things to worry about here besides eating. I'm still full from yesterday. All right, we have Thomas Gable from the Borgata joining us here on the show. TG, welcome. Happy Thanksgiving to you, and please enlighten us with all your Giant fans that were in your shop yesterday watching that game and holding that 3.5 ticket.
Yes, well, happy Thanksgiving to both you and Will there. And let me tell you, it's never good when the best quarterback in the stadium is in the announce booth for a game, and you're forced to watch the other guys who are actually on the field, because that's a game where if you bet it, God bless. Just bet it and go eat with your family. Go get away from the TV for a while and enjoy family time, and then come back for the nightcap with the Packers and Dolphins. But I mean, listen, overall with the 3 games yesterday, you had 3 favorites winning outright, 2 of which covered with the Packers and the Cowboys. So wasn't a great day for us. The Lions not covering kind of saved it from being really bad, but obviously, all those people who like to bet the money line parlays on the favorites, all that came home. And But I mean, listen, between the Eberflus, whatever you want to call it, the terrible clock management at the end of the first game there, to just the bad football between the Giants and the Cowboys. I mean, so many penalties. It was a very tough watch. And then you get to see Tua going into cold weather again, and once again coming up short in Green Bay. So, I mean, listen, I don't know how much we really learned from yesterday, other than the Eberflus probably is going to be out of the job this week. Probably should have been out of the job prior to yesterday. And the Packers, I don't really know what you could take away from Green Bay there. They're one of those teams that you can say maybe have an outside chance there to win the NFC. I still think it's going to be an uphill battle against Detroit or Philadelphia with them. They're definitely going to be dogs to both if they meet them in the playoffs. But I think if you're looking for another team in the NFC outside of the two favorites in Detroit and Philly, you know, it's, you're going to have to take a look at Green Bay, possibly Minnesota there. But I still think it's going to be a two-horse race, though, between Detroit and Philly, unless they both stub their toes.
Yeah, I think there's no question about that. I mean, to me, Detroit and Philly, as I wrote about this morning for a column I'm doing on VSiN.com later today, Detroit and Philly's numbers continuing to keep getting better. And where the rest of the league, I'm not quite so sure. Minnesota, certainly they can keep up. I mean, they went into Green Bay and won convincingly. They got the big lead, and then Green Bay made the comeback. But I don't know if there's another team that can really match it. It's not coming from the West, because San Francisco's beat up, and with all their injuries. And this week they go into Buffalo, which I want to hit you on before we go to today's action with Kansas City and the Raiders. Weather in Buffalo, severe snow. They're talking about lake effect. What have you done to adjust this game? Or has anybody hit this game hard on the over-under totals?
Now, the total's dropped a point and a half from where we opened. We opened at 46. It's down to 44 and a half. And like you said, I think once that weather information becomes a little bit more secure, then you're going to start to see that total come down a bit. It mostly been Buffalo money. We opened 6.5, and it's up to 7. And it's been, again, mostly Buffalo money. And everybody remembers what they've seen of the Niners as of late. So not surprising that Buffalo is taking the majority of the money there in that one. But yeah, I definitely think once you start to see this forecast become a little bit more firm with this, you're going to see this total come down.
Thomas, I know how people bet. They like to parlay all the money lines on the favorite money lines. Those are all going into today, because the home team's won. I'm sure you're going to be rooting probably for the Raiders to somehow do the unthinkable and win. What's the action looking like for today, and what's your handicap on the Chiefs laying 13 here?
Now, you're absolutely right, Will. If you just did the money line parlay yesterday with the three favorites, you got there. And if you included the Chiefs, well, you're still riding today. And I mean, we're still Chiefs 13. It has dipped to 12.5, but back to 13. And I mean, listen, if you laid the points with the Chiefs last week, you were lucky. You were unlucky, because you certainly lost that ticket, but Chiefs were lucky to even walk away with a win there against Carolina. So I just wonder about the betting public, if, you know, they remember that and say, listen, they couldn't even cover against the Panthers last week. What are they going to do here against the Raiders? Yes, now they're home at Arrowhead, at least. But the Raiders, again, I mean, this is them and Carolina are pretty much the worst two teams in the league by power ratings. And I guess you could throw in New England there as the third. But so the Chiefs have kind of gotten a nice little break here in the schedule. But, I mean, to be able to cover this number, 13, you'd think, all right, yeah, they should be able to cover two touchdowns. But I don't know. It's just with the Chiefs, you never know, and they just – seem to never cover these big numbers against poor teams. So I do expect to get some Las Vegas money here. I do think some people are going to say, hey, the Raiders are, give me 13 with the Raiders. But yeah, I mean, listen, you still have a lot of parlay liability on the money line, which, I mean, listen, the money line is super expensive on the Chiefs when you're laying 13 points. delay $7.50 on the money line, but it's still in there. It's still part of our liability from the parlays from yesterday, as you've mentioned. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, I do expect to get some Las Vegas money though on the spread here in this one.
All right, the big game of the week, Philadelphia traveling down 95 to play the Baltimore Ravens. Lamar's 25, and he's got this incredible one loss record. 25, I got it right in front of me here. He's 26-6 counting last week, TG, when he's a 3-point favorite or an underdog in games. So we're starting to see a little bit of movement on this line. It's coming down to 2.5. It is at 3 in some places. Where are you in this game? I'm sure you're still getting a ton of Eagle money.
Surprisingly, this is pretty evenly bet here, Michael, at the present. We're sitting Ravens laying 3. We certainly are getting people who are taking the 3 with Philadelphia. But the other thing to keep in mind with Lamar, the NFC has not been very successful against Lamar. I mean, it's tough when you only see him once in a while and to defend him, because there really isn't anybody in the NFC that you see on a regular basis who plays like him, who is of that level. So, listen, Derrick Henry has had an incredible year. Obviously him and Barkley are the two rushing leaders. They get the face off here in this one, but I think Lamar is definitely the X factor. And I think it's also going to come down to that Philly defense. We talked throughout the year here about how good the secondary has been for Philadelphia and how that has really been the driving force and the catalyst for the fact that last year with that nosedive that they took, the secondary was terrible. This year, it's the complete opposite with the personnel change that they brought in. But now this is going to be about stopping the run. And can they contain Lamar? Can they keep him in the pocket? Easier said than done when you don't play anybody like that throughout the rest of the season. So I give Baltimore the edge here, certainly. And, it's just Lamar against the NFC. And we've seen it time and time again play out. The NFC does not do well defending Lamar.
Thomas, last minute or so, big college card today, tomorrow. What's the college game you're most interested in here in the next 2 days?
Yeah, I think Black Friday, it presents a great opportunity for sports books. It's an underrated betting day with the big college slate happening today. You got Colorado playing today, obviously a big favorite there against Oklahoma State. Colorado obviously has been a very popular play for bettors. And then Iowa, Nebraska is going to probably be a pretty good one. Along with Colorado State, Utah State tonight is actually, believe it or not, for whatever reason, that is the most bet game of the day for us. Wow. In terms of handle so far. You wouldn't have picked that one out on the bingo card, but that's the most handle on it.
Well, Thomas, we appreciate you being here. Good luck this weekend with all the games. I'm sure you're going to have a pack house over there at the Borgata. We appreciate you being here. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, guys. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you, too. When we come back, we're going to do a deep dive on that Eagle-Raven game that Thomas talked about, where he's got 50% split on both teams. And then we're also going to talk about the Steelers-Bengals. Mike Tomlin is a dog. You know everybody's going to run to the window on that one. We'll be back here on the Lombardi Line next.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back to the Lombardi Line. I'm Michael Lombardi, joined by Will Hill, filling in for Dave Ross, who's taking some Thanksgiving days off, enjoying the family back at Virginia Beach, enjoying his incredible Dallas Cowboy win yesterday. Will, I'm sure he's at the betting window, betting more for the Cowboys. And his nemesis here, Tim Murray, we welcome him on the show. And I say nemesis, Will, because every week Tim has been betting against Syracuse and just driving Dave crazy. But this is week he goes on vacation, and Tim Murray likes the Qs with the 11 versus Miami. I mean, Tim, what are you doing? Our guy's gone, and he doesn't even know you're rooting for him.
It really has become this incredible game we're playing here. So, yeah, I bet on his beloved Orange, and he's not here to hear about it. So, you know, such is life. But no, you know, Will and
tell
I.
Tell us why you like the Orange men this week.
Yeah, I want to dive into it here. So it's an interesting spot. And look, this is kind of a, you know, hold on to your butts type of special, guys, because you look at Miami and they've got all the pressure in the world on them right now, heading up to the Dome and taking on this Syracuse squad. Now, it's worth noting that Syracuse's defense is just awful. So this could potentially get ugly in the sense that Miami should be able to score pretty much at will. But I've been really impressed this year by Kyle McCord. And I think when you look at his numbers and the numbers that he's been able to put up, I think Syracuse will have some success offensively on Saturday afternoon. And then you add in the factor that, you know, Mario Cristobal has kind of struggled in these particular roles where they're expected to win. Look at the Georgia Tech game earlier this year. The pressure's on them. The college football playoff rankings are out there in the top 10. Really, all they need to do to get in, it seems, is win on Saturday, and they're probably going to be in good shape based off of what we saw last week, guys, from Alabama losing, Ole Miss losing, kind of opening up the door to the possibility of two ACC teams getting in. So that's what I'm so curious about today and tomorrow, guys. And we saw a little bit last night with Tulane losing as a double-digit favorite, where this pressure starts to set in on these programs. And how are they going to respond to that pressure? So I've been impressed by what Fran Brown's done year one up there at Syracuse. I've liked what I've seen from Kyle McCord. I think they can score. It's just, can they get enough stops to keep this within the number against Miami? And I'm certainly hoping so.
Tim, it's hard to believe this is the final week of the regular season. Feels like we're just getting ready for the Labor Day slate, the week's here, and here we are, the final week. That being said, we have more questions than answers in terms of who's in. What are you most interested in terms of like the committee and what possible conundrums they could face next Sunday? And who are the teams that you think are safely in the field no matter what happens this weekend and next?
Yeah, I think Oregon certainly safe no matter what happens. Ohio State safe no matter what happens. I think Texas is. I don't think they should be, but I think they are safe no matter what happens. The one that's interesting, I tweeted this out, guys, is Notre Dame. And obviously I'm a Notre Dame homer, but I think if they lose on Saturday, I think they're in trouble. They don't have a great resume. They are 10-1. They've been dominating everyone. And I came in studio, I think on Wednesday, and Mike Palm was giving me all this crap about my tweet saying, hey, they're going to be in no matter what. I'm like, I don't know, Mike. Like, maybe it's the pessimism in me, pessimistic side of me. But I look at their strength of schedule to date, and I think that if they lose on Saturday to USC – and then maybe we couple in a Texas A&M loss, I think they're in some trouble here, guys. So I think Notre Dame is certainly interesting. I think a lot of people looking at Indiana, I think Indiana, the committee told us they're going to be in. They play Purdue on Saturday. They're a 4-touchdown favorite. I think they're in, you know, pretty good shape. You know, Will, I think the one that's pretty fascinating to me is this Clemson-South Carolina game on Saturday, because we've got Clemson at 12. Bama, Ole Miss, 13-14, and then South Carolina at 15. South Carolina lost to both of those teams, but they're playing really good football right now. If they were to go to Clemson and beat Clemson, what does the committee do with South Carolina if someone like Notre Dame loses? Do they jump Bama and Ole Miss, even though they have head-to-head losses against both of them? So I think that one, if you're looking for kind of a curiously chaotic scenario, Clemson, South Carolina, if the Gamecocks pull off the very slight upset, what does the committee do with a 3-loss South Carolina team that's playing really good football? And, you know, one of their losses early this year was pretty unfortunate with some bad calls that went against them. So I think that's one of the really unique spots we've got with everything unfolding in front of us with the 12 spots. And then lastly, I'll say this, Tulane losing yesterday certainly feels like it's set up a UNLV Boise State, assuming both win this weekend. Boise's got Oregon State and UNLV has got Nevada. If both win, then it seems like that is a play-in game for the group of five bid. So Tulane's loss opened up the door for a lot of I would say a lot of VSIN employees' favorite squad, UNLV, to potentially get in the playoff.
You mentioned earlier about Texas. You're not sold on them. They play A&M, and there's a ton of money coming in on A&M, and you like A&M this week. Tell us why.
Yeah, I do. And look, it's always nerve-wracking when you when you think about it seems like a lot of common think on this, which is fine. You know, I trust the people we work with, and Texas got to prove it to me. And if you go down to Kyle Field on Saturday night, Michael, and you win, you don't even have to win pretty. I mean, I prefer a win by less than, you know, 6 points, but I need to see it from Texas, because it's funny. There's so much discussion, rightfully so, about Notre Dame and Penn State and their resume, because, you know, Penn State doesn't have a win over really anyone that important. Illinois, I guess, has been in the top 25 these past couple of weeks. And then Notre Dame's got the horrific loss to Northern Illinois, and all that's fair. But I look at Texas's resume and I'm like, why aren't we talking more about Texas? What's their best win? Is it over 6-5 Vanderbilt by 3? Is it over an Oklahoma team that just beat Alabama? So I guess they're good now. So I'm not saying that Texas isn't good. They brought back a ton from a team that went to the college football playoff a year ago, but they're 10-1 with no wins over current top 25 teams. So prove it to me. Go down to Kyle Field, get a win, and, you know, cover this point spread. So Texas A&M's kind of been Jekyll and Hyde this year. When you look at some of their highs, where they were able to beat LSU coming back when they thrust Marcel Reed into the quarterback role, they destroyed Missouri. But you look at the South Carolina loss. You look at last week losing on the road to Auburn in what was just one of the stinkiest lines of the whole year. So these teams haven't played in 13 years, guys. We've seen all the reports about how expensive the get into Kyle Field on Saturday night. The crowd's going to be amazing. The crowd was pretty good week one, and it didn't help them out. They still lost to Notre Dame, but I like Texas A&M here. I want them to kind of put it all together. We know how good they can be defensively. I want to see Marcel Reed play a clean game. But yeah, for Texas, I need to see it. This is a team that it feels like has gotten the benefit of the doubt throughout the year, but they haven't really done much in my eyes to earn that benefit of the doubt outside of, you know, making the playoff last year. Lastly on this one, guys, Quinn Ewers, how healthy is he? He's dealing with an ankle injury. He's expected to play. So that's also a concern as well for Texas. I know they've got Arch Manning waiting there in the wings, but do you want Arch Manning being your guy down there in a hostile environment? So I think we get a phenomenal game on Saturday night, two rivals that haven't played in over a decade, and I'll take the points with Giga Maggie here.
Tim, it's a new era of college football where we know so little going into the season. A perfect example, Arizona State. State was 130-1 to win the Big 12. If you bet this Arizona State game in the summer, it was Arizona laying 17. Now it's Arizona State laying 9, a 26-point line movement. Who do you like in this game?
Wouldn't it be nice to have that ticket? Man, go back in the DeLorean and grab Arizona State 17 in this spot. That would be nice to have that ticket. Unfortunately, I don't have that ticket. And it's funny thinking back to how we previewed these teams, and Arizona State was kind of an afterthought at Arizona with, you know, Tetero McMillan coming back and, you know, Noah Fafita coming back. It was like, all right, Arizona, this is going to be one of those popular teams to win the Big 12. Nope, they're the worst cover team in college football this year. So I go back to the pressure. Arizona State has had an incredible year. Kenny Dillingham deserves just so much credit for what he's done in such a short time there in Tempe. But now you're going on the road to take on your rival who has had a nightmare of a season, and you're a 9-point favorite. So, you know, this is one of those spots, guys, where on Saturday afternoon, I might just be punching myself in the head saying, I really bet on Arizona to keep this thing close. What am I doing? They've quit on the year. And there are, you know, stories out there that Arizona boosters already have the buyout money ready for Brent Brennan. That was reported a couple weeks ago from one of the Arizona sites. But I'm going to take the 9 here with Arizona at home. And I'm just going to say, once again, the pressure is on Arizona State. You just had a crazy win over BYU. All you have to do is beat your arch rival, and you're in the Big 12 championship game. I mean, it's that simple. Arizona State is in with a win and then an opportunity to get to the college football playoff, which I don't think anybody anticipated. So I think there's some pressure there, and I'm going to bank on, do we get one last quality performance from McMillan and Fifita and what more than likely will be their swan song, guys. So give me the Cats plus the 9 in the Territorial Cup on Saturday afternoon against ASU.
Well, we will be watching that one. I mean, Noah Fajita, unfortunately, losing Jed Fish, I think he lost a lot of luster. That whole Arizona program has gone downhill. We're probably going to see a bunch of players transfer if they don't make a change. Tim, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate having you here on the show. Good luck to your Irish this week. We'll see what Lincoln Riley has in store. Can he win a big game? I doubt it. I really do. I doubt it. I'm looking forward to watching it, though. When we come back, we're going to talk about the bet of the week here with Will Hill and I return here on the Lombardi Line.